Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning. Anita Marks with you on this Sunday afternoon, or I should say morning. I've been up for quite a while. So what does that mean? Sunday Funday is back. That's what we like to call these the next 3 hours. Excited to be with you. It's what a gorgeous weekend. Yesterday was just absolutely magnificent, and today looks like it is going to be as well. Hopefully, maybe you're on your way to the golf course. That would be nice. Just the past 2 days have been phenomenal golf weather. And how about that? The PGA Tour is back with the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial in Fort Worth, Texas. I'll get you up to speed on that leaderboard. Because here's the thing, right? Like, it's really the only sport that's back right now. Besides, of course, UFC, the fighting, of course, is back. But we're waiting. We're anxiously waiting for Major League Baseball to kind of get on the board and come to an agreement between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball PA. I have an update there. In fact, that's what we're going to lead with the show the next 30 minutes. I think it's important we dive into that. Excited. Ian Begley is going to be joining me at 9:30. Talk some NBA. What is the latest there? Last weekend when I was hosting this show, there was a lot of optimism and excitement because we finally got a date on the board in regard to when the players, the NBA players, are going to arrive in Orlando and start their quarantine and start their practice so that hopefully we get a season going in that Orlando bubble. But Kyrie Irving is kind of derailed that, not sure exactly, how strong his efforts are to plead to the players to say, don't do it, don't restart the season. We're going to get into that with Ian Begley and see where does the NBA stand right now? And is it, can we still anticipate the dates that we expect towards the end of this month for them to, of course, arrive in Orlando, start the quarantine, start the testing, start the practicing, so they can start their NBA season again? So excited to have Ian Begley on the show. And then David Sampson, a good friend of mine and good friend of the show. I like to have him on a lot because he's just so opinionated and he's so in the know because, well, he used to be the president of the Miami Marlins. And so now part of our broadcast world and does a phenomenal job with his podcast, and he's on CBS. But I always love having him on. And he's going to be joining us at 10:30 this morning to really dive in to where we stand right now with Major League Baseball. And I'm going to get into some details with you in just a second. And then, of course, like I said, hopefully you're on your way to the golf course, or maybe you woke up really early today and you had an early tea time and you're on your way home. David Berman, who oversees Daily Wager and our chalk site, our gambling platform on ESPN, is going to join us at 11:30. Just to kind of give you an idea of where we are with the leaderboard, Schauffele, I like to call him X-Man, Schauffele, top of the leaderboard, 13 under, shot a 66 yesterday. Wow, all three rounds. And keep in mind, this is the first tournament back for the PGA Tour, and you didn't really know what to expect. I wrote an article for the ESPN chalk site prior to the tournament, the players that I liked, the players that I was putting money on. Rory was one of them. Ricky Fowler was another. I really liked what I saw from Ricky Fowler a few weeks ago when he played in that TaylorMade Skins Challenge. But Ricky Fowler didn't even make the cut, which was really surprising to me, kind of disappointing. He was like my long shot to win it. But Rory is still in it. Hopefully he can make a good push for it today. Rory is 10 under, so he's three shots back. He tees off around 1:10 in the afternoon. But at the top leaderboard, like I said, Schauffele's at the top leaderboard, 65, 66, 66. That's what he shot. Morikawa's up there as well. Great ball striker. I said prior to this tournament starting, if his putter was to show up this week or this weekend, he'd be in it to win it. And sure enough, he is. So you've got Morikawa, Jordan Spieth. This course is his own backyard. He's from Dallas, just a stone's throw or a pitching wedge from Fort Worth. He's 12 under. Brandon Grace is 12 under. Justin Thomas and Gary Woodland, some big names at the top of the leaderboard. Very exciting stuff. Daniel Berger, that's a long shot. I have money on him. I liked him coming into this tournament as well. He's 11 under with Harold Varner III. And I want to stop right there because Varner has been leading this tournament the majority of the time. And for folks out there that maybe you're listening, you're like, why is she talking about golf? It's not one of those sports that really moves the needle. But in this day and age where we are right now, with Black Lives Matter and the movement that we are witnessing and we are involved in, I think it's important for folks out there who you might not be a big golf fan. You might not play golf. You might not watch golf. Maybe you are right now just because it's really the only, active live sport that is, that's happening right now. But understand that there are not many men of color, black, brown, that have had success playing golf, have won at playing golf. And if I remember correctly, I was watching the broadcast yesterday, and I want to say that if Harold Varner III was to win this tournament, and keep in mind, he is 11 under, so he's two shots back. And this week he shot a 63, a 66. Yesterday he shot a 70. Okay. But dude, he shot a 63 on Thursday. If he could channel that Thursday game and really make a good run and a good push for this, he'd become only the seventh, either the sixth or seventh. I want to say if I remember correctly, I think the broadcast said that there was only six African American players that have won a PGA Tour event. Do you know how long the PGA Tour has been around? And you're talking to me that we're talking single digits in regard to African Americans or minorities winning on tour. It would be special. It would be a very obviously timely storyline if Harold Varner was to win today. He is teeing off at 140. And let me say this, like, you know, I know folks are, what are you talking about? Tiger Woods is black, Anita. Tiger Woods is Tiger's father was black. His mother is Asian. One of my biggest knocks on Tiger Woods is that I never felt that Tiger Woods totally embraced, that African American history, that he's a part of for whatever reason. He has somewhat, but not to the total degree that I think that he could have and could have made, I think, a much bigger change in regard to the minority community getting more involved in golf. And for whatever reason, I'm not sitting here, listen, I don't want to sit here and bash Tiger Woods. That's not what this is about. What I'm sharing with you this morning is that there's something special that is happening today on the PGA Tour. Whether you like golf, you don't like golf, you don't like watching it, whatever the case, you think it's boring, I get it. Don LaGreca, if you're listening, I know you can't stand it, whatever. And that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I respect it. It's fine. But there's something special happening today. And, you know, we're in the midst of this really strong, exciting time. And this movement that's happening, and Black Lives Matter. And for Harold Varner to show up today and put a phenomenal round of golf together and possibly win this damn thing after this, we're in the midst of a pandemic. The tour's been on pause for 3 months. It would be special. It would be unique. It would be a phenomenal storyline. It would be perfect. It would be absolutely perfect. So maybe you've never watched golf before. Okay. I highly recommend you watch it today. And I highly recommend we all root for Harold Varner III today. Again, he's three shots back. He's in it. He could win this damn thing. And he tees off at 140 this afternoon. Again, David Berman, who oversees our chalk site and Daily Wager, is going to be joining me at 11:30. We'll dive into that more when he's on with us. But 800-919-3776 is the phone number. I do want to spend the next, let's say, 20 minutes talking about what's going on with Major League Baseball and getting you up to speed. So there is a statement from the Major League Baseball PA Executive Director, Tony Clark. I'm going to read it to you in just a second. But let's go back. What happened on Friday? The owners made another proposal. Keep in mind, you've got billionaires proposing to millionaires, right? In regard to trying to get an agreement going that Major League Baseball can get back into action. Keep in mind, whenever they do come to an agreement, if they do come to an agreement, players are going to need at least 3 weeks spring training to get back in action. So, and there is a timetable here. Major League Baseball does not want their season to go past September. They don't want it to go into October, November, because experts in covering, obviously, the COVID-19 and the pandemic we're in are expecting another surge in the winter come November and October, November. So Major League Baseball would like the season to end in September, the end of September. So there is a, there's a time frame here that Major League Baseball would like to get this going. Now, they made a proposal to the players, 72 games, and the players would get 70% of their prorated salaries. If the playoffs go on in its entirety, then they would get anywhere between 82-83%. Okay? And they'd like for the season to start July 17th. Okay? Now, the players rejected that. They said, listen, pretty much what you're asking us to do is you're not paying us. Understand, if you were to take a player's salary and divide that by the number of games in a regular season, players are saying, pay us what you would pay us per game for the number of games for the 72 games. Major League Baseball is wanting to pay the players for 50 games, but it may be more than that. So just to kind of give you an idea. So the players are looking at this and saying, well, wait a minute. We'll be playing 72 games for you for free. So what happened? The players rejected it. Here's the statement from MLBPA Executive Director Tony Clark. Players want to play. It's who we are and what we do. Since March, the association has made it clear that our number one focus is playing the fullest season possible, as soon as possible, as safely as possible. Players agreed to billions in monetary concessions as a means to the end. And in the face of repeated media leaks and misdirection, we made additional proposals to inject new revenue into the industry, proposals that would benefit the owners, players, broadcast partners, and fans alike. It's now become apparent that these efforts have fallen upon deaf ears. In recent days, owners have decried the supposed unprofitability of owning a baseball team, and the commissioner has repeatedly threatened to schedule a dramatically shortened season unless players agree to hundreds of millions in further concessions. Our response has been consistent that such concessions are unwarranted and would be unfair to players. Our sport deserves the fullest 2020 season possible. This remains our position today, particularly in light of the new reports regarding MLB's national television rights, which, by the way, Major League Baseball apparently has agreed to terms with Turner for Turner to broadcast their playoff games, and it's a $1 billion deal. It's a $1 billion deal. The information we requested from the league weeks ago, but were never provided. The owners in Major League Baseball are not willing to provide their financial records to the players, the MLBPA. So the Major League Baseball Players Association has no financial records in regard to understanding exactly how much Major League Baseball teams and the owners profit. They don't have it. They're not willing to give it up. As a result, it's unfortunate. It appears that further dialogue with the league would be worthless. It's time to get back to work. Tell us when and where. So where we stand right now, the players want a schedule. They're not going to turn around, you know, going back and forth that we've seen. Owners present a proposal, and then the players or the MLBPA, they counter propose. Players are like, enough with that. Give us a schedule. Give us a schedule, and we'll go from there. And so now the ball is back on the court of the Major League Baseball owners to see what they'll do. Now, Manfred, the commissioner, said that he guarantees that there will be a season. It's not looking like that right now at all, right? Also, I want to share with you a programming note, and I'm trying to call up Ty and Kyrie, produced the show yesterday, and there's a special that ESPN is going to air. Here we go. Actually, that's not it. Here we go. ESPN is to host a show. It's called The Return of Sports with Commissioners. It's going to air Monday night from 9 to 11 p.m. on ESPN. And it's going to have Roger Goodell, Adam Silver, Manfred, Gary Bettman, a number of commissioners, and Mike Greenberg. Greeny's going to host it. And that's Monday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern time. I highly recommend we all watch it. It's going to be very interesting to see, especially with what has happened now with Major League Baseball as being really the one league that's behind the eight ball, no pun intended, to try to get a season together and get going. But I'm going to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. I'm curious with our listeners out there, whose side are you on? I had Rob Dibble on my show yesterday, and Dibble said some interesting things. He said, listen, the owners are going to be the owners. You're not going to be able to change them. They're never going to give you their records. They're never going to give you your financial situation. And keep in mind, Dibbs was a big part of the players' voice in 1994-95 when they went on strike back then. And pretty much in a nutshell, when he was on with me yesterday, he said the players have an opportunity here. Major League Baseball has been suffering in regard to the fan base. There is no sport going on right now. Well, obviously, as I just said, golf is. But we are craving. We are salivating. We are craving for sport to happen, live sport. So pretty much in a nutshell, Dib said, just bite the bullet. Agree to the 72 games and the 70% prorated salary, 80, 82, 83% if there's a full playoff. And embrace this platform right now because fans are hungry. Hungry. There won't be any fans in the stands, but boy, we'll all be watching. You might not be the biggest. Listen, I'm not the biggest baseball fan. You know me. I'm a football gal. But if there's a baseball game on tonight, yes, damn Skippy, I'm watching. And I think that's for a lot of us. I think a lot of us are watching golf right now. You might not be the biggest golf fan, but are you watching the PGA Tour right now? You probably are. Why? Because it's live sport and you can gamble on it. My true colors come out. So what Dibs is saying is bite the bullet, agree to this, and then turn around in the next collective bargaining agreement and say, hey, listen, remember what we were able to do, what we did for you in 2020? All right. It's time for us to get and recoup what you're giving up right now in the new collective bargaining agreement. But the players don't have trust in the owners. So I can see both sides, but I kind of liked what Rob Dibble shared with me on the show yesterday. Fight your battles wisely. Maybe this isn't the battle you fight right now because you have the opportunity to have an immense platform during a pandemic where we're all just so thirsty, craving live sport. This is an amazing platform. So bite the bullet now. Agree to this deal. Get the game going. Don't risk what the fallout could be in years to come. Major League Baseball took them over 5 years to get back into the good graces of the fans for after 94-95. Don't let that happen again. But let's be honest. Most of the guys in Major League Baseball right now weren't even what? They were in diapers. Maybe they were like 9, 10 years old back in 94-95. They don't remember. So I'm curious, 800-919-3776, what side of the ball are you on? Are you with the owners? Are you with the players? Are you just so fed up and sick about billionaires and millionaires and this becoming a collective bargaining agreement in the midst of a pandemic when over 40 million people are unemployed? Are you just sick to your stomach with it? I'd like to hear from you, 800-919-3776. I'm coming to you live from my living room. You haven't heard the dogs yet. They're actually in my back room, because that's the sun comes in and they're actually staring at me. So in the break, I'm going to move their doggy bags back there. That's a nice break for me. And we've got Giselle, who's back, who's in the studio in New York. We have Nikki answering the phones. So it's a three-person show from three different places. It's amazing. This is 2020, what we're able to do with technology. And we'll take your calls next.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Sunday Funday back in action. Pretty stoked about it, too. Been on the shelf for kind of like the PGA players. I've been on the shelf for 3 months. So so great to be back on Sunday. Hey, before we get to Ian Begley, I do want to play this clip from Brian Windhorst and him talking about the players and what they agreed to just last week.
There's players high up in the union that I think were surprised by finding these details out and are part of the group that isn't so sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's people on the executive committee of the union who aren't so sure that they want to go forward with this. And those are the people that were on the front lines of talking about this. So I do think that it's like a proxy for anything. So I think this proxy was approved and it probably needed a little bit more examination. And that's what's going on right now. But for your fans out there, I do think we're going to see the NBA bubble. It's going to happen on schedule, and I think we're going to see the majority of the players in there wanting to make a go of this.
All right. Without further ado, when he came in studio with me, and that is Ian Begley. He's now with SNY TV, covers the Knicks, the Nets, and all things NBA. So, Ian, great to have you on. Thank you so much, my friend.
Always good to be with you, Anita.
All right. Well, let's dive into this. By the way, I'm broadcasting from my living room. So if you hear my dogs barking, that's why.
I love it.
What is the latest? Because I felt like last week I was hosting Sports Talk Radio and there was a lot of good vibes and excitement that the NBA looked like they had set a schedule. Players were going to arrive in Orlando. They were going to be tested, quarantined. Practice was going to start. Oh, we're going to have a season. And then all of a sudden Kyrie Irving hosts a Zoom call trying to tell the players, don't do it, don't go. Kind of give us some insight in regard to how that all went down.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, you know, this wasn't like a Kyrie-led revolt or anything. I don't think that's accurate. I think he, as a member of the union executive committee, just wanted to give a voice to all the players, give everyone a chance to be heard, to express their opinion. And, you know, he himself reportedly is against going to Orlando, but is also open to going if everybody decides that they want to go. It sounds like he would just support either decision, according to some reports from the conversations. From what I've heard from somebody briefed on that Zoom call was that there were a number of players who were set against playing, who had wanted to sit out because of the unrest in the country in the wake of George Floyd's killing. They want to do something impactful, and the thinking is that maybe sitting out is the most impactful thing to do. But, you know, opinions are all over the map on this. Different players have different feelings. We saw it on social media with the way Austin Rivers expressed his thoughts about agreeing with Kyrie Irving with the idea that something needed to be done and they wanted to be a part of the change, but disagreeing with Irving and other players who felt that sitting out was the best approach to achieving change. So, you know, there's no uniform opinion, and I don't think there's a uniform plan in place. I think the general thought with Friday's call that was organized by Irving and others was, let's just give everyone a voice. Let's give everyone the opportunity to speak. I didn't see it as any kind of a revolt or anything to that degree.
Well, it's kind of what is how it's being reported is, you know, Kyrie the disruptor, you know, trying to convince the players, don't go to Orlando, don't do it, you know, not only because, you know, it'll take away from the movement, but also, you know, health concerns. So very, very interesting. Here's the thing, I'm trying to remember who I had on yesterday, and we were talking about this, and that is, Bobby Marks. And, you know, we are dying. We are thriving. We are thirsty. We are salivating for any type of live sport action. So once that gets going, and it sounds right now based on the reports from Major League Baseball, the NBA, I know golf is going on right now, but the NBA would be like the next sport, right? That mm-hmm. would be brought. What a platform. Because, you know, those that aren't even NBA fans will more than likely be watching and gambling on the NBA. And so is it more wise to participate in this and to get the league going again? Because the viewership is going to be off the charts, Ian, and the platform will be there. It's evident from the NFL now saying everybody can kneel to, NASCAR banning the Confederate flag. I mean, like, it's evident that the majority is on board. And so the platform will be there and the viewership will be unlike any other. Is that being communicated? Is that a feeling out there amongst the players in the league?
Yeah, certainly that's a factor, and certainly that's a point of discussion among players. Malcolm Brogdon has talked about that publicly, as that being a part of what players are talking about when they're talking about how best to go forward here. And I don't think that's lost on anyone. I can't sit here and say what's better or what's worse. That's an individual player's decision. That's something that an individual player has to feel comfortable with. But certainly there's going to be a ton of eyeballs on these games, and there's going to be a ton of eyeballs on the players, the coaches, everyone involved. So if you want to get a public message across to a large swath of the population, it's an effective platform. But, I'm sure that certain players feel like the best way to get that message across is to not participate. So, you know, that's an individual decision, and I think that what's going to be interesting is I think ultimately there's going to be enough support or enough players who say, you know what, I want to play, and I'll either get my message across publicly or do something else to help further the cause here, but I want to play. So I think we will have games, so it's going to be interesting to see which players actually sit out, decide not to come, and which players decide to play, and how it all goes forward, because I think ultimately it will move forward. But I do think there are players who, you know, I know there are players who are seriously considering sitting out.
Ian Begley joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You can see his work all over SNY, SNY TV. All right. So with that being said, let's talk about what's next. And that is Orlando. Now, very interesting. You know, Mama Mimi, my mom, she's from Florida. She's down in Miami. I talk to her every day. I'm on her, you know, can't go out, can't go play Mahjong. Food gets delivered from Instacart. Got to wipe it down outside. Like I coach her. Like, I feel like I'm a coach. I coach her every day. 78 years old.
She's lucky to have you. She's lucky to have you. She finally.
Right? Like, I'm on her. I'm on her. Like, we got in an argument the other day. She's like, I have to take my dog to get his fingernails cut. I'm like, no, you don't.
Not essential. Yeah,
no, not you essential. Don't. That's not essential. She's like, no, Anita, it's horrible. You don't understand. They're so long. Like, and I'm like, no. Like,
unless the dog is injuring people, it's not essential.
So I'm
with you. I'm having the same conversations with my parents. No Costco trips. Get it all delivered. Let's be safe. Yeah.
I know. Isn't it something?
Yeah.
I talk to her every day. So I know, you know, COVID on the rise down in Florida, Orlando, mm-hmm. the bubble city for the players. There is so much. Like, you know, the more I read about it, like, for example, like, this is something I'm sure people haven't thought about. What about the bus drivers? Because apparently there's going to be three courts for the broadcast. One is going to be where the Orlando Magic plays. The other is going to be where UCF plays. And the other is going to be at the complex, the Orlando complex. That's where there'll be three games going on at the same time that you'll be able to watch, whatever. So, you know, like, what about the bus drivers who are going to be driving them to and from? Like, are they going to be quarantined? How is that going to work? Apparently, you know, nobody's going to be allowed in their rooms. So they're not going to they're going to have to keep their rooms tidy. They're not going to have the service of, you know, not alone on their rooms. Apparently, like, staff's not going to be allowed on their floor. So it's all these little things that I think, you know, that we don't really think about all the T's and the I's that have to be crossed. Like, how confident, how confident, Ian, do you think the players are that the league's got a good grasp on this?
I think there's confusion out there with regards to what the ultimate plan will be. And I think leading up to yesterday, there was a lot of confusion about the testing and when that would start to take place, because I know there were some players who were felt they had properly socially distanced during the time that the season was on pause. And they had concerns about coming back around other teammates or opponents who they didn't think had properly socially distanced while the season was on pause. You know, their fear was, hey, I saw, you know, this guy was out and about, whether it was playing pickup or a social setting or even protesting. And, you know, their concern was, I'm going to get it from this teammate or this opponent. But what the NBA did yesterday was they sent out a memo telling everyone that everybody who's going to be together in a group setting is going to be tested in advance of coming into that group setting. So maybe that allays some of the fears that the players had about, you know, getting it from a teammate or an opponent who they felt may have been exposed to it. But to your point about the bus drivers and the hotel workers and the Disney non-NBA party employees, that to me, it's also an open question, because unless the NBA is having like full control over when and where and what these people do and all that, then you can't have full confidence that you're going to be protected from them. So, you know, there's a lot of, as you said, T's and I's that weren't crossed before this was agreed upon. And I guess the thinking was, we're going to figure all this out in the days ahead. And clearly, some of these issues have led to ill feelings and some reservations from the players.
I know. It's wild. Okay, a few things before I let you go and enjoy your Sunday fun day with your beautiful family. You know, some of the reservations that the players have in this bubble, and one in particular is, I guess there's discussion of putting a tracking device on their cell phones, not because, you know, they want to know their business, but because, let's say, you know, and God forbid, I'm just throwing the name out, let's say LeBron James comes down positive with COVID-19, they'll be able to track who he was around the last 5 days and then be able to test or quarantine those people. You know, it's a means to an end. It's doing it to keep everybody safe. But from what I understand, the players don't want that. They're not happy about, you know, having to kind of live in this bubble. Even though I had Ramona Shelbourne on last weekend, she said they're going to be allowed to go golfing. They're going to be allowed to go out and eat at outside cafes. It's not like this is going to be a situation where all you can do is practice, play, and then you have to be quarantined to your hotel room the whole time. There is going to be opportunities for them to kind of get out, get some fresh air and golf and do some stuff. But there's, but players aren't down with it. And I guess here's my thing. And I've talked about this on my show before. I just don't think professional good grip of reality. Listen, we are living in a pandemic. Has my life changed? Yes. Am I unable to do things that I enjoy doing? Yes. Will I ever be able to do it again? Hopefully a vaccine is created at the end of this year, beginning of next year. And, you know, I'll feel safe going into a restaurant again or doing the things that I used to enjoy doing. But we've all been sidetracked here. We're all living a different life that wasn't the one we dreamt of, for 2020. But it's the reality. And I feel like when I hear what the players are, well, we don't want to do this and we don't want to be quarantined and we don't want to be tracked. And to me, it's just like they don't have a grip of reality and the fact that we're in a pandemic. Have you been, I'm curious, Ian, in covering the NBA and listening to what their complaints and concerns are, have you had the same feeling or response to what you've heard from them?
Well, I come at it from two ways. One, with regards to the tracking and the way that, you know, we're inconvenienced and they'd be inconvenienced with getting in Orlando and playing. Yeah, I think it's just you have to be comfortable with a certain amount of risk and inconvenience in your day-to-day life to live. I mean, that's just what we're all kind of faced with. And, you know, different people are making different decisions based on that. And, you know, I think that you have to weigh whether it's worth it to you to be inconvenienced and to make your money, because the players are being docked some of their paychecks right now while they're not playing. And if you don't pick up the rest of the season, they're going to lose out on a lot more money, as is the rest of the league, as our owners. So, you know, that's something you weigh as an individual. Me personally, I would go down there and play. If I'm just thinking about all the aspects of the quarantine, you know, being away from your family, that's brutal. I don't know how I would feel about that aspect, actually, but the rest of it, I think I'd be okay with. The other piece of it is, for me, you know, these players know that if they don't play, they're sacrificing the money. They're not going to get the money, a lot of the money, for the rest of this year that they're owed. They're also opening up the possibility of ripping up the collective bargaining agreement, of losing out on future money, of losing out on the guaranteed salaries that they have currently that other sports don't enjoy, and taking a big hit in revenue. And if a player is aware of all these factors and still feels that he wants to sit out and not play, and he's willing to put all that financial game at risk, hey, that, God bless him. And if he feels that that's the best way to keep the attention on the racial injustice in this country, God bless him. I don't have any problem with that at all, as long as there's a full understanding of the economic impacts of it. My hat's off to that person. So I see it. I come at it from both of those directions.
Ian, thank you so much for spending time with us on this Sunday morning. I really do appreciate it. I miss seeing you in studio. But congratulations on your new job with SNY TV. And again, thank you, my friend.
Really appreciate it, Anita. I miss you too. Keep fighting the good fight with your mom. I'll do the same with my parents, and I certainly hope to see you soon.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you on this Sunday fun day, back in action. Oliver, thank you for the phone call and thank you for the heads up. We have David Sampson who's going to be joining us. Actually, David, I want you to pop on. I want you to come on right now before we start talking Major League Baseball. First and foremost, how are you, my friend? David, you there?
Yes.
You. Hi.
Hi, Anita. How are you?
I like the beard.
Oh, God. I need baseball.
Are you? So let me ask you something. Is this a thing? Like, are you not shaving the beard until baseball is back? Is that the thing?
So it's called the ML Beard Challenge. I'm not shaving or trimming, doing anything until opening day of Major League Baseball. And I'm donating $1,000 per day for 100 days to worthy charities who are just, I'm trying to make a difference. But more importantly, I'm trying to draw attention to the fact that there will be baseball, but it's just going to take a little bit of time.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, before we, and God bless you. That's fantastic. Before we start talking baseball, I was talking NBA before you joined me, and I had a caller who called in, Oliver, was talking about like the NBA and the Florida quote unquote bubble quarantine, yada, yada, yada. And Oliver called in and said, it's not even going to be a bubble because Disney's not even going to test its employees. And of course, it took me by surprise. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that's ridiculous. If I'm an NBA player, I'm not going to go there if Disney's not testing their employees that are going to be around me. Anyway, he's absolutely right. Here's a quote. So this is from NBC Sports, asked and was told by Disney union representatives that it's unlikely the staff would have daily tests to be quarantined. The question was, will the food servers be tested every day? The housekeepers, custodians, more broadly, what's the point of quarantine for several weeks doing daily tests for 22 NBA teams if Disney staff doesn't do the same? Disney workers have not been told to quarantine on campus, according to Eric Clinton, president of Disney's labor union, United Here Local 362, I guess that's what it's called, which represents custodians and ride operators. Clinton told NBC Sports that it was unlikely that staffers would be subject to daily testing and quarantine measures like NBA players and team staffers. Okay, so if this is about the park, okay, you know what? If I'm Adam Silver, I'm telling the dudes, don't go to the park. Can't go to the park. They're not testing their employees. Can't go to the park. But I would hope, and I would pray, and I would imagine that any staffers that are going to be anywhere near this bubble, that are going to be anywhere near these players, are going to be quarantined, let alone tested every day. Agree or disagree, David?
100% agree. It's got to be part of the new protocols, and we've talked about it with MLB. There's a lot of people involved in putting on an NBA game. You have to talk about the people who are driving the team buses back and forth to the basketball court. You're talking about the food service delivery people, the people who are cooking the food. You have to have testing in place the same as you are for all the people who are in strength and conditioning and the trainers and the doctors and the broadcasters, anyone who's a part of this quote-unquote bubble. But we keep calling it a bubble. But keep in mind, Anita, what they're talking about doing in Orlando, it's sort of like every team's on a road trip in the same place. I'm not so convinced it's going to be the type of bubble. Are all teams going to be at the same few hotels with nobody else? Are they going to have all the players on the same floors so that nobody else is around them in the hotel? You just don't know. There's a lot more information to come out before games return, to say nothing, Anita, of the fact that there are more and more players saying that they don't want to go at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, the latest in regards, it's Sookie. She's barking. Somebody's walking by my door. I am still broadcasting from the living room of my apartment. Hey, Sook, I'm on the air. Thank you, sweetheart. the latest in regard to Kyrie, isn't it great when they listen?
I can't even imagine. Have you ever heard of a cartoon called The Far Side? You remember that?
Of course.
So you're talking to your dog and you're thinking that your dog heard, hey, I'm on the air. Right? That makes me laugh. Do you think your dog knows that you're on the air live right now?
Well, here's the thing. So this is like, I don't know, my 10th, 11th show that I've done in my apartment. And I really, they kind of look at me like with that side, you know, when you ask a dog a question, they like cock their head up to the ones. They kind of look, because they're like, who's she talking to? Like, I think they're like, for 3 hours, they're like, what is she doing? And who's she talking to? Like, there's no other human in this apartment. So this whole thing, I think, has been weird for them. But anyway.
One of the great mysteries in life, Anita, is whether or not animals are actually hearing English or are they hearing intonation? Because you talk about
they hear English. My dogs communicate. Like if one of my dogs is on my pillow, I'll be like, come on, Momo, gotta move. And he moves.
I love that. Okay, back to the NBA.
Okay. Well, actually, let's do this, because I wanted you to come on because of Major League Baseball, and actually Major League Baseball and what happened yesterday and what potentially is going to happen this week is probably more on the front burner than the NBA right now. And where it stands right now is the players, they've rejected the last proposal, 72 games, 70% prorated salary, 80, 82, 83% if it's a complete postseason, and looking to try to get in action July 14th. And the players said, no, we're not going to do it. We want to be prorated 100% in regard to what we would be paid per game. And I'm curious, first and foremost, you know, what side are you on, David? Do you think the players should be paid 100% prorate in regard to the number of games that they play? Or do you think, because we're in this pandemic and we're in this very, you know, weird situation, that they should accept a prorated deal?
I think that all employees right now are subject to pay cuts from their employer because of what's going on with the pandemic. And I think the players are no different. What is bothering me at the moment is I think that the owners and the players really are being tone deaf and having, like last night was incredible, having competing statements going out one after the other, one worse than the other in terms of trying to get fans to understand their point of view, trying to set up the legal challenge that's forthcoming. When the reality is, when you're in it, Anita, and I was in it for 18 years, you think that everything you do publicly is so important and it has to be geared toward legal victories in case of grievances and you're setting up the record. I was there. I did that. The truth is, now that I'm outside it, I think the statement should have been one statement together between the union and the owners saying, listen, to all the fans of MLB, we can't come to an agreement right now, but there is one thing we all agree on. We need to play baseball for you, the fans. Therefore, we are going to start the season on July 14th. It is going to be a 52-game season. There are disagreements over money and things that you shouldn't concern yourselves with, and we're going to deal with those at another point. I think that would have been better for the game. We could have had a huge victory as an industry. But there's so much vitriol and so much distrust that they couldn't get it done. And I think that's bad.
All right, let me ask you, right, there's reports Major League Baseball just worked out this new deal with Turner. They're going to broadcast playoff games. It's a billion-dollar deal. Why is it that the owners will not relinquish financial information to the players?
For the same reason that when you're negotiating your contract with, let's say, ESPN, and you say, no, I'd like to be paid $100,000 more, and they say no. And you say, but come on, you've got the money. Show me your books. I know you can afford to pay another $100,000. Come on, just show me your books. Come on, Anita, you know that's not how it works. That's just, these are private companies, and employees don't get to demand of employers, open up your financials because I want to decide what you can afford to pay me. That's just not realistic in any private business in the entire world.
Suki. She's obviously not listening now. Suki Sook, stop it. Mama's on the air. But here's the thing, and I understand your analogy, but it's different, right? Because the players are making a percentage of the profit. At least they think they are. And
no, so that's not right, Anita. I'm sorry to cut you off. That is something the owners were looking to do. The owners thought, let's be like the NBA, let's be like the NHL and NFL, and let's do a percentage of revenue and make that tied to player payroll. That is not what exists in baseball. Therefore, it has nothing to do with revenue, what players are paid.
Interesting. All right, so where it stands right now is the players now have the balls back in the court of Major League Baseball and the owners, and the players are saying, instead of us making a counter offer, we want to know, give us a schedule, and then what do you think two parts to that question. A, do you think Major League Baseball and the owners are going to provide a schedule for them, and what will the players do with that schedule?
So I think that now something that I didn't want to happen, but it looks as though they are forcing MLB's hand to implement a schedule, which means you send the schedule like any other year. Just so interestingly enough, every year Major League Baseball sends a schedule to the players. Here's the 162 games. Here's the first day of spring training. Here's the first day of the playoffs. Here's the last day of the regular season. So MLB is going to do that again. It's just going to be a much shorter schedule. And then it is very likely that the players will file a grievance saying, we want to play more games. We're available to play more games. And then there'll be a grievance that'll be heard over the course of the next months. It could even be over a year. But the games will go on, and the games will go on with the schedule that MLB sets, and baseball will happen. There'll be a World Series, and that'll be the 2020 season.
So how many games do you think that the owners are going to propose, the 52?
It's based on the calendar. So the earliest you can start today is what? Are we in June yet? June 15th or something?
No, right. We don't even know what day it is. I know.
So it'll take 1 or 2 weeks for the players to get to spring training. Then you need 3 weeks of spring training. I think it's at least a month from Monday before games can start. So I'm going to say July 20th as an opening day. And then you can play till the end of September. So you've got 2 months plus 10 days, which is basically 70 days. You cannot play every day because there's rules in terms of how many games in a row teams can play, and the schedulers know that. So I would say 50 to 55 games at most, and then you go into the playoffs. It'll be regular playoffs, four teams per league, six teams per league. I'm having a Sunday moment. Do you ever get that?
It's okay. It's all right. You probably haven't had your first mimosa yet.
It's three. No. The problem is I've had my fifth mimosa.
Oh, okay.
That may be the issue. No, I'm just kidding. It's three division winners and then two wild cards. So that'll be 10 playoff teams, and that'll be that.
So, and based on what I'm reading, the reason that Major League Baseball wants September to be the end of the season is because they're worried about if you go into October, November, the experts like Fauci are expecting a surge again, possibly a relapse of the pandemic. Is that the main reason why that September is that end date for them?
No. So I thought that too, because I thought that the broadcasters of the playoffs, which are Fox, Turner, and ESPN, I thought they'd have no problem showing playoffs and World Series in November. And part of my proposal to return to play that I wrote about was that we should play the regular season through October and then play the playoffs in November. But it's turning out that the broadcasters don't want to show MLB postseason in November. They want to stick to October. So that is a huge part of why baseball does not want to extend into November, because if you have postseason without TV, it's not really postseason. You have to have TV. So I think that part of this will be a public disclosure that the broadcasters were not interested in showing baseball in November. Because if they are, then it's okay to play through November, because the second wave, frankly, is happening right now. And Anita, we need to talk about this, because the NBA, NHL, and MLB, all of these return-to-play scenarios, they assume that health protocols have been agreed to and that it is safe to return, and that's not a guarantee at all.
Oh, I'm with you, but just two more things, and I do want to dive into that, and that is, so you're confident that Major League Baseball will have a season? You're confident that's going to happen?
100, well, I love, so no one's ever asked me that directly. The answer is I'm 100% sure that the labor situation will not stop a baseball season this year.
Okay. And you think it'll be anywhere between 50 to 55 games and will start sometime in mid to late July?
That is what I think is where we're headed. But I'm worried as I sit here today. I'm worried about the health situation around the country.
No. Right. I want to dive into that in just a second, but and you think the players will then agree to play for the 80% prorated?
No. The way it works is when MLB imposes a schedule under the agreement that was struck with the union in March, MLB imposes a schedule and pays the full pro rata salary. That's
okay,
what this whole economic argument's been about, is that the fewer games, the better for the owners, because they're forced to pay full rack rate. If the players would take a discount, a pay cut, then the owners would offer to play more games.
Got it. Okay. All right. One last thing. I had Rob Dibble on my show yesterday, and Dibble was a part of the 1994-95. He had a big voice in regard to the players, and when that strike happened. And he said, listen, knowing what I knew then and how I can assess what's going on now, this is what he said. I'm curious to get your response to this. He said, you're not going to change the owners. The owners are always going to be the owners. Be in control of what you can do right now. And what you can do right now is get back into action, get into training, get into spring training, get on TV. People are thirsty. They're dying for sport. You won't have a bigger platform. Get out there. Win the fans back. Increase your fan base. Be embraced by this pandemic society. Unite a community through sport. Do all the things that you have control over, and in the next collective bargaining agreement, you could go back and say, hey, listen, remember back in 2020 when we played for 70% of our prorated? You owe us. Is that something, if you were an agent, is that something that you would tell your players that you were representing?
No, because that's Fantasy Island talk, Anita. So you don't get to go back to management and say, look, I took a pay cut, so give me more now. Because management doesn't have to do that. There's no legal basis for that. And in terms of increasing, having the platform to ourselves as an industry, it is true that people are watching sports right now in record numbers. You put golf on and people are watching and betting on it and all sorts of engagement because it's been so many months. And I don't think baseball's lost that opportunity, because as soon as the games start, there will be less and less talk about this situation and this conversation that's taken place. You got to remember, this pandemic, it's nothing like this has ever been seen. This is not like the 94-95 strike or lockout, because back then they knew what they were fighting about. They understood exactly the future and the revenue they were talking about. Now, can you guarantee me, if you're a player, can you guarantee that the free agents' contracts are going to return to what they were with Machado and Harper? No, because there's no way to know what the revenue is going to be like. There's no way to know if fans are going to come back, having nothing to do with baseball, but having to do with the pandemic. There's no way to know how consumer spending is going to change over the next 4 to 6 to 10 years. So it's a complicated time.
David, I'm up against a break, but could you just hang on a second? I'd love to keep you on for one more quick segment, and we could talk about the health issues. Is that cool?
I'll be here for you, Anita. You know that.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you. You're on 98.7 ESPN. I'm with you until noon this afternoon, and then I'm going hiking. It's my Sunday jam now, David.
I like it. I like that you go hiking. I'm going to go running.
And let me let folks know that you participated, you competed in not just a triathlon, but the Ironman in Hawaii, which was really, really phenomenal. By the way, David Sampson, former executive president of the Miami Marlins and now a part of CBS and has a phenomenal podcast out, and it's called Nothing Personal. How can folks tune into that?
Well, anywhere you get your podcasts, Nothing Personal with David Sampson, we do it every day, 5 days a week, and we try to translate and decode what's going on in the world of sports, business, politics, entertainment. And there's a YouTube channel, Nothing Personal, so we do video and audio. It's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but I'll tell you, I love the audience. They're loyal. It's growing, and there's so much to talk about. And you'd think with no games that there'd be nothing to talk about, but my show is built for this type of situation because there really is no shortage of content.
No, that's for sure. And I love having you on. I thank you when you join us. In fact, I got a text message from a very good friend of mine in the business who said, I root for David Sampson. If he ever gets back into Major League Baseball, I'm going to root for him. I thought,
well, that's
that
nice. Although after 18 years, Anita, I'm ready to be on your side. I like the media side. I like being unshackled. 18 years was a long time.
All right, so we just have a few minutes in this segment, and I do want to dive into the health concerns, because money and finance is one thing, health concerns is another. And I'll tell you what, in reading and listening to how the NBA is handling things, NHL is handling things, I really do believe this is uncharted territory, right, David? We've never been here before. We have all these experts, but nobody really knows for sure. At the end of the day, this isn't about if, it's about when. And leagues are going to have to really be ahead of the curve in regard to how to handle and how to contain when a player is tested positive for COVID-19. And if you're scared, say you're scared. I'll tell you, I'm scared. I think we're rushing into it. I understand all the reasons why. There's a lot of money on the line here. These leagues have to start up again, let alone get started to begin with. I just don't have the confidence. It's not a knock on the leagues. It's just something we haven't done yet. I'm just not confident that all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted, David.
Well, they're not yet, and you're not going to see any on ice or on court or on field sports until it is. NHL is rumored to have games in Vegas. Do you see what's going on in Vegas? They opened it, but no one is taking it seriously. There's no social distancing. There's nobody wearing masks. And the question is, what will happen when players test positive? Not if, because they will. So what you do is you quarantine them, and then you have to use contact tracing. And so players have to be honest. And let's talk about Vegas. Let's talk about Orlando. So some of the NBA players go to Orlando with their kids who are looking at Mickey and Goofy and Pluto, and they're saying, sorry, we can't leave the hotel. You can't go to the park. There's no Disney World for you. I'll see you in 2.5 months. I just don't think it's realistic, and that's what worries me about some of these plans, where MLB's plan to have people at home at least opening in all of the cities, I think that's more realistic than actually doing a bubble, and nobody's talking about that, Anita, but I am on Nothing Personal.
All right, well, explain to me, why do you think that is safer? I mean, here's the thing. Let me rewind. Obviously, these NBA players are going to, for 3 months out of their life, you know, they're it's going to be different. It's going to be a sacrifice, right? But look, we're all living a different lifestyle right now. I mean, heck, I'm hiking on Sundays as opposed to having Sunday brunch with a seafood tower and a few bottles of rosé with some of my dearest friends in the city. Life has changed for all of us, okay? Life has changed for all of us. So, you know, it has to change for professional athletes. Here's the thing, David. I don't think they have a great sense of reality. And what's going to need to happen in order for a season to go off and go off safely.
And we're far from that in all the sports. They're working on sort of the health protocols right now. And by the way, Anita, one thing you have not mentioned is the NBA and the NHL and the NFL will still have to have arguments and discussions with their union, with their players, because the revenue has changed so substantially and gone down so substantially. Baseball is just fighting in public because they're the first league to fight, but the other leagues will follow. As for the health plans, forget the, you know, what Kyrie Irving is saying and what Dwight Howard came out and said. I absolutely have great respect for their point of view and why they're saying what they're saying, how it just doesn't feel right to play with everything that's going on in the world. I absolutely get that. But now just focus on the health side and say, listen, if players are not willing to follow the strict rules of the road, then I don't think they will understand the seriousness of COVID-19 until the positive tests start coming. And once they start coming, if you're the San Antonio Spurs, how are you going to feel if you get your coach, Greg Popovich, sick? Because there's no studies right now. If you have COVID-19, it could be in your lungs. It could be in your body forever. They just don't know yet. And I don't think players will want to be responsible for getting anyone sick. So I think they'll have to be behaved. But the question is that realistic, and will they understand what is necessary before they enter into any sort of return to play? So it's going to be fascinating to watch, but it's not a slam dunk, Anita.
David, thank you so much.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
So obviously a big week on the PGA Tour, the 8:46 a.m. moment of silence here each day. And for Varner, one of two African-American golfers in the field, he knows the importance of what a win would mean for him and maybe a lot of what's going on across this country.
Talking about Harold Varner. He is 11 under heading into today. He tees off at 1:40 p.m. Eastern time. He's two shots back. Shoffley is at the top of the leaderboard at 13 under. I cannot stress enough how significant a win it would be for Harold Varner III becoming, and David Berman joining us oversees our Daily Wager and our chalk site, our platform at ESPN. I want to say, would he be the sixth or seventh African-American to win on tour? David, do you know? I was listening the other day. It's one or the other.
Still, I don't know off the top of my head, but I think it was six. Obviously, Tiger has the lion's share of them. But either way, five, six, seven, I think the numbers are relevant. I think you have to look at the fact that what it would mean in today's day and age. Like if Varner had won, you know, a month or two ago in an event, may not mean as much as what he is would do today to a society and a world that is hurting right now because of what happened in Minnesota and all the protests that are going on and Black Lives Matters, and winning a week after all that stuff would just be unbelievable for himself and for society and for everybody watching. Plus, it would be huge for golf. I mean, Tiger Woods has carried the mantle for pretty much the last 20 years, and it would be good to have, you know, another African-American athlete out there winning a PGA Tour event.
Oh, it would be tremendous. And the storyline, I don't think you could have written a better storyline if that was to happen. By the way, Varner to win, plus 2,800, by the way. So let me ask you this, because you and I, we work together. We're texting each other all the time, especially on Wednesday. All right. You know, who do you have? What's your, you know, who you have winning? Who's your long shot? What are your matchups? You know, and I've got a lot of money out there on Justin Rose and Rory, and I had Ricky. Ricky didn't even make the cut. Regardless, I've put some extra coin on Varner. And at the end of the day, because of where we're at, and I know where my heart is, I'm going to be rooting for Varner, even if it means if I lose some coin, David. Just because I think the storyline is much more important and much more significant than any money I can make today. Are you in the same boat with me or no?
I am. I don't have any money on Varner, and I know that the odds are long, and he is technically only two shots back, but the problem is he has, you know, 15 golfers in between him and the lead. So if he comes down to the very, very end today, and, you know, let's say it's Xander Schauffele, who I have money on, who I told you yesterday I liked at 10-1, and sprinkled a little more on it today at 4-1 just because I really, really like the way he's playing. I had him yesterday in the matchup versus Rory. If it comes down to the 18th hole and I'm looking at, you know, Schauffele winning me money or Varner winning the whole thing, I'm with you. I'd be pulling for Varner for sure.
All right, well, let's talk about your plays and who you do like. What is it that you're seeing from Schauffele right now that you like heading into this afternoon?
he's just really hitting the ball very, very well. And as we talked about earlier in the week, this is a ball striker's course. It's not a bomber's course. So the guys who can get it there aren't the ones winning this event. Shoffley is hitting those irons really well. He's not getting in a lot of trouble. He's putting the ball up there, down there in the fairway, 280, 300 down. And like I was watching him versus Rory yesterday. Rory was out hitting him on almost every single drive. But some of Rory's were hitting the bunkers, the light rough. All Shoffley was doing was hitting fairways 280 and 290 every single time and get it on the green and either putt for birdie or make a par while others were trying to get out of the rough and hitting it into the bunker and, you know, having to come back on. So just looking at yesterday's Rory versus Xander matchup, you saw a lot of what I liked about Xander. Yeah, at the end of the day, Rory's likely the better golfer and you would take him at almost every major over Xander. But the way this course sets up, I really like the way he's playing. I've actually taken him all 3 days in head-to-head matchups so far, about the only ones I have won. And I also have the 10-1 on him. So hopefully he pulls it out and that'll minimize the damage on some of the other bets that I've made.
Yeah, I haven't done well in this tournament, but you know, as I said in our article that you can read on ESPN, the Chalk site, you know, wagering on this tournament was like wagering week one in the NFL, right? Like that was the feeling that I had. These guys were on the shelf for 13 weeks. You know, some we saw on social media, like DeChambeau, who actually is done quite well. He's 10 under. He's only three shots back, tied for ninth. He looks great. They've done analysis on his swing, and boy, he's getting after it. I mean, he's hitting the ball almost 400 yards consistently, which is just ridiculous. But, you know, so I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to, like, you know, get all upset about myself in regard to some of the bets that I've made. Like I said, Ricky Fowler, I thought based on what I saw in the TaylorMade Skins match, I felt pretty good. And especially one of the things is that, you know, this is different. This is a different vibe. No fans, no gallery. It's a different vibe for these guys to play in. And I felt like, wow, you know, Rory as well as Ricky have already experienced that and kind of know what to expect. I thought that would be an advantage, but I was wrong. Here's a guy that I liked. I put some money on him to finish in the top 10, top five. He's tied for second right now, and that's Morikawa. This is a guy that really, he's a good ball striker as well. The big question with him is whether his putter shows up or not. And obviously it has. He's only one shot back. He's 12 under. Another guy is Spieth. Whose Spieth's problem, as we know, David, has been upstairs. It's in his brain, but it seems like the 3 months really has done well for him. Not to mention, this is a course that he does well because this is kind of like his backyard in Fort Worth. Your shots on Spieth. You have any money on Spieth? Maybe winning this thing today?
I did this morning. I took him at plus 610 this morning just because I like what I see out of him. He's not a guy that I like to take pre-tournament at all because Jordan is, you know, with all due respect, he's a guy that you really never know what you're getting every single week. You don't know whether a layoff hurt him, helped him. If he, you know, hitting the ball in the water in Augusta hurts him the next, you know, 2.5 years, you really don't know what you're getting. So I wanted to see what I could get out of Jordan. And I actually think he has a legit shot to win. It is a hometown course. He's playing very, very well. I really liked what I've seen from him so far. So I took him at 6.1 to 1. 6-10, and back to what you were saying before about it being like week one of the NFL, which you absolutely hate betting. And if I had to do it all over again, even though I work in sports betting and you and I work in golf, and the combination of golf and sports betting is kind of my fix, so to speak, but I probably would have skipped this week. Just like you, you know, I haven't had a great week on it. I've had a couple of wins here and there. The three guys that I took pre-tournament, and I hope nobody's listening at this point, the three guys that took pre-tournament were Rahm, Simpson, and Ryan Palmer. All three missed a cut. I had them in 20s, top 10s, winning the tournament. I based it on how they played on this course. You had nothing to go on when it came to recent form. You know, this is Ryan Palmer's actually a member of this course. John Rahm plays this course well, and Webb Simpson won it a few years ago, and all three of them missed the cut. The matchups I had on Thursday all went bad. So I rebounded a little bit yesterday, had a couple of underdogs with Xander over Rory, and I picked Murray Kawawa over DeChambeau. So I got you head-to-head there. So a little bit of a comeback, and we'll see what happens today. Like I said, I have Xander. I sprinkled a little bit on Spieth, and I took Justin Rose at 20-1 today. He's a guy who went out there and shot a 63 on Thursday, and he's just kind of treaded water the last 2 days, but I wouldn't put it past Justin to go out and shoot another 64 today and put himself in contention. He's only a couple of back, and to be able to get 20-1 on Justin on a course he's played well this week, I like that bet. And the rest of the matchups I have out there, I did take Rose over Connors. I took Charles Howell III over Watson. Howell III's had a pretty good, solid week. I like Brian Harman today, and I know I'm going head-to-head with you, but I took Hubbard over him. I know you have him.
I love him. I think he's one of the best golfers on tour, and many, many times he flies low on the radar for whatever reason. But I mean, to be honest,
it was more about Hubbard. I went and looked at Hubbard's scorecards this morning, and if you go back and look at his three rounds, he's had some pretty, pretty solid rounds and only got in trouble one time. And you're getting 165 as a price, so I thought that was a good enough price to take him. So whenever you're looking at prices like that, it's one of those situations where you're getting more than 1.5 to 1 on your money versus a really, really good golfer. I'm not expecting it to win, but then again, you're getting the price that's worth it.
So do we have a personal wager going on right now? I have him, you have Hubbard?
Sure, so if I get 165 odds, I got to get something out of it.
No, straight up, I have him, you have Hubbard. Whoever loses pays for the round of golf that we're going to play, hopefully in the near future.
What about the bottle of wine from the bet we made on the XFL?
I'll bring the bottle of wine with that matchup.
What are we playing? Are we playing soon?
Hopefully, you got to let me know what days you're off. You've got to come down here from Bristol.
I'll be coming down here. I can probably play middle of next week if that works for you.
All right. We'll set up a date. Before I let you go, I have a listener, an avid listener. He listens to the wagering show that I do on Friday nights, We Can Wager. And he called in today. His name is Sal. He's a very, very nice man. He had a question for me. I couldn't answer it. He put in a futures bet with Major League Baseball, Yankees 3-1 prior to the pandemic. He wants to know, does that bet still register? Do you think Vegas is going to honor their futures bets that were placed pre-pandemic, even if, let's say, hypothetically speaking, there's a 52-55 game season? What do you think is going to happen to those futures bets that were placed before the pandemic, David?
It's a very good question, and we actually have a couple of articles on our chalk website, ESPN.com/chalk, about what it means for your ticket. We have it for basketball and hockey, and once baseball decides what they're going to do, we'll write the piece for baseball. I'll preface it by saying that the listener, if you're listening now, you should check with the book you put it at and the state you put it in, because the book and the state are very important, because each book and each state has different guidelines depending on where you are and what book you bet it. I will say that for the most part, everything that I have heard, future wagers on two-win titles, two-win conferences are going to be honored, because the teams are still going to play, and the Yankees still have a chance to win the World Series, even if it's a 50-game World Series versus a 162-game World Series. So my intuition would tell me that, again, I don't know what state and I don't know what book, that will be honored. However, if he took Yankees over 101 wins like I did, that's not going to be honored because they're not going to play 101 games, so I'm going to get my money back. It all depends on where and when. I'll give you an example. The Oklahoma City Thunder were 31.5. I took the over while in Vegas at Caesars. They won 41 games before the stoppage, 10 games over the total. Now that the season's going to restart, they're only going to play 8 games. They're not going to qualify for the 80 games necessary to get that ticket paid. So I am not going to get paid for a ticket that I've won by more than 10 games because I bet it in Las Vegas, Nevada. Had I bet it in New Jersey, I would get paid for it because New Jersey regulations say if you've won the bet already, we'll pay you for it. If you took the Warriors under, we'll pay you for it. If you took the Oklahoma City over, we'll pay you for it. But in Nevada, the rules are different. In Nevada, you have to play 80 of the 82 games. Therefore, that ticket is null and void if the Thunder don't play 80 games, which I don't remember how many they've played so far, but if you add 8 to it, you're not going to get up to 80 games. So I'm going to get screwed there. But I believe the futures on title odds will be honored. Props are a different story and all sorts of other things. You gotta check with each book in each state. It's a very complicated thing. None of us have ever seen this before. I bet you down the line, when you make a ticket, the ticket's probably going to say right then and there what you need. But as far as that Yankees guy at 3-1, I'd be pretty confident that he would get paid for that. I made a half a dozen baseball win total bets. They're all going to be null and void. But like your listener, I have the Clippers at 10-1. I have the Heat at 30-1. I would imagine that if either one of them win the title, that I would get paid off for that.
Interesting. I wonder if moving forward, tickets are going to, you know, make a mention like, you know, in lieu of another pandemic.
Yeah.
In lieu of another pandemic, this ticket will be valid.
It's going to have to be. And basically the school of thought is if you have a future ticket on a title odd, there is no min or max games played. So as long as they finish the season, you would get paid. For win totals, that's different. Win totals, I have to play the certain amount of games. And it stinks because I obviously won the Oklahoma City one. I won by 10 games and there were still 20 to go. But that's the laws of Nevada and Caesars. And if I'd bet it in Jersey, I'd be fine. So.
Unbelievable. David, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I have M. You have Hubbert. Get ready to lose.
I had Morikawa yesterday. You had DeChambeau. So if we lose, we're even.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday fun day.
See ya. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.